There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to another edition of Life Behind Mars. I'm Noah Rothbaum, the Daily Beast half full editor. Joining me, as always, is my colleague and co-host, David Weintraub.
Cheers. Here we are.
Here we are, talking drinks. One of my favorite things to do.
Second only to, of course, drinking them, but...
When you can't drink them, you talk about them.
Yeah. That's you can do both, I suppose. Right. And for all you guys know, we are.
We are. The topic of today's podcast might actually turn your stomach a little.
It kind of puts me off drinks a little.
You might not. Maybe finish your drink now. Wait a minute. And then get into this. Because once we start talking, you might not want to finish your drink. Stories these days and conversations and all the dig conventions like Tales of the Cocktail and BCB and... all this stuff is about authenticity, right? And spirits that are, this is how it's always been made. And, you know, sometimes I laugh because I think, you know, if it was really made the way that sometimes things were made 100 years ago, we would all be dead, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't want to drink it.
Something as simple as American whiskeys. I was going through newspaper ads the other day for American whiskey from the 1940s, wartime, and the 1930s, you know, the Depression. And the vast majority of American whiskey that was being sold was blended whiskey.
Oh, yeah.
And for a while there, by law, if you advertised it, you had to say what was in the bottle in the ads.
Right.
And so it's like our finest whiskey, 32% straight whiskeys 4 years and over.
Right.
And then 68% grain neutral spirits.
Exactly.
Or, you know, 25% whiskey. And then 75% grain neutral spirits.
Or aged with wood chips. You know,
And it just goes on and on. Brand after brand, these famous brands, particularly during World War II, of course, they had problems. Even before that, you even find some whiskeys. Pennsylvania seems to have been bad for this, where they were selling whiskey that was 25% whiskey and 75% not grain neutral spirits, but cane neutral spirits.
Basically rum.
Yeah, basically just like refined, you know, flavorless mojito rum, you know, with a little bourbon splashed in.
That's how I like it.
Yeah, I mean, so you just laugh, you know, you think of whiskey branding, it's like, okay.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and those were, that was if you were lucky.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, there's also the long tradition, I mean, even before that.
Before that.
In the 1800s, where there's a real problem of, you know, whiskey in quotes, where, you know, you have all these recipes in basically every cocktail book, every bartender guide to make whiskey, right?
Oh, I mean,
And we're not talking about a distillation guide. We're talking about taking essentially some kind of neutral grain spirit, right, and turning it into whiskey.
I mean, here's one from the 1908 edition of Cocktail Bill Boothby's World's Drinks and How to Mix Them. And he gives you a recipe
He was a pretty famous bartender in San Francisco.
Yeah, he was one of the top bartenders in San Francisco.
You're going to call yourself Cocktail Bill Boothby.
Yeah.
I mean, that'd be good.
He had been in the state legislature, elected as a bartender. Go Alexandria. And, you know, he was respectable. He worked at the Palace, which was the top hotel in town. But he gives you a recipe for Monongahela whiskey, which is rye, to 40 gallons of proof spirits. Add 2 ounces of spirits of nitre, whatever the hell that is, 4 pounds of dried peaches. Let me just go get some of those. 4 pounds of New Orleans sugar, 1 quart rye burnt and ground like coffee. So that's the grain. 1/4 pound allspice, 1/2 pound of cinnamon, and 1/2 pound of cloves. Put in the ingredients, and after standing 5 days, draw it off and strain. So that's neutral spirits with a bunch of shit in there.
At least that stuff is potable. I mean, some of it.
Yeah. Oh, some of it is worse. I don't know about spirits of nitre, though.
Right. Well, who knows? But like, you know, they're using, you know, they're telling people to use creosote and all types of stuff.
Oh, yeah, it gets worse. Never... It gets worse.
And that was fairly standard. I mean, part of it has to do with the fact that you weren't going into a liquor store to buy a bottle because there were no liquor stores. Yeah. I was like, if you wanted whiskey, you would go into a grocery store or a bar, right? They had barrels there. You could fill up a flask, or maybe you have a jug.
Or they would, if they did sell it in bottles, they bottled it themselves.
Right. And it was, you know, quite expensive. And really, I mean, you know, in America, we see 1870, you know, Old Forester, you know, always claims to be the first bottled American whiskey. And they're not actually marketing it to consumers, right? That's the most interesting. They're marketing it to doctors because the founders of Brown-Forman, who that's their first product, though, you know, Old Forester, the idea is that they wanted for doctors, right? Where doctors were prescribing alcohol for a range of maladies, which was legitimate. I mean, it sounds kind of like a joke, but they could never be sure if the alcohol did more harm than good.
Right, because it was bad.
Right, and so they were like, all right, this Old Forester is 100% whiskey right from the distillery in a bottle that's sealed so you know it's going to be pure. And that sounds ridiculous today. Like, well, who cares? But back then, that was a revolutionary idea. Yeah. I mean,
you could get pure spirits if you lived in a big city and you went to the best liquor dealer in town and were prepared to pay top dollar. There were reputable stores who would give you the real thing. But there were also other stores.
Right. And I think that was rare. Like you really and even the way that whiskey was made back then, where you have, I mean, you had big brands, but I mean, we also are a nation of farm distillers, right? Mm-hmm. So obviously George Washington ran a very large rye distillery after he left the White House. And he was not alone. And you had people, including Pappy Van Winkle, who drive around in a buggy, I guess, a carriage, right? And buy barrels from smaller distillers. They put it together. They blended it in lots, or redistilled it.
Yeah.
People then go around store to store selling, you know, taste from the barrel. The barrel would then come to the store. Was it what you tasted? Who knows?
Who knows?
Were they tasting people on?
Well, that kind of thing got heavily industrialized when you had the Whiskey Trust also, which was a ring of industrial scale grain alcohol distillers in the 1870s, 1880s that made all adulterated whiskey and sold it like as huge brands, you know, and it was like, okay, this is like if the Coca-Cola company was selling fake Coke, you know.
And it's not just whiskey, you know, or spirits. It's a lot of food.
It's everything. I mean,
you know, you have people selling, you know, butter that's not really butter, but it's made of beef tallow and, you know, all types of chemicals. You have milk is being adulterated with all types of preservatives, you know, that candy is full of like lead and all this other stuff. It's amazing that anybody survived, to be honest. They're adding all this stuff so that like the beef can, you know, supposedly be palatable for, you know,
like days long storage. Right? It was really bad. I mean, that's what got us the Pure Food and Drug Act. Good example of government doing something for the people.
Again, amazing because you know, all of these, I mean, it sounds like a story from 2019, but you have all these giant, you know, interests, you know, all these lobbies, you know, whether it's the beef or the milk or...
None of them wanted to be regulated at all.
Right. And they were, you know, they saw this as an amazing, you know, technological leap that they could turn all these like trimmings into margarine. Just add
I can't believe it's not poison.
And it's great. And it's so widespread.
Yeah.
Part of the liquor business, but it's part of everything.
Yeah.
I mean, sort of take that for granted.
It's kind of funny that the guy who spearheaded and provided the science to beat all this stuff back to fight these really powerful interests to a standstill was Harvey Wiley, who was a huge whiskey fan.
Right.
And he that was his hobby. When he traveled abroad, he went to distilleries. You know,
it's amazing.
He's got we've got like pamphlets that he wrote when he was the chief chemist for the government, where he's like, And then I went to Scotland and looked at all the stills, and here's what they looked like.
Right.
You know, just like any modern whiskey geek would do.
Right.
You know, so he really like cared about whiskey. He sponsored the first scientific study of how whiskey ages, which is still an amazing study with 30 whiskeys studied over 8 years.
Ugly.
They sampled them, you know, and did chemical analysis every year.
Yeah.
This amazing study. He did all this stuff. He made sure that it applied to whiskey as well,
oh, for sure.
Which is why later they had to say how much neutral spirit they were sloshing in there. But there were all these whiskey brands that died after 1906. Like before that, Duffy's Pure Malt Whiskey was huge.
Sure.
That was supposedly the best medicinal whiskey.
Right.
Malt whiskey is better for you than you know any of these mixed grain whiskeys. Jeez. It turns out there was no malt in it at all. It was just grain alcohol.
And you see, you know, like spoons and all types of ephemera that they gave out.
Yeah, Duffy's was real big. And then suddenly...
Right, nope.
Nope.
You know, in 2019, all these different brands claiming that they figured out how to speed up the aging process, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh,
yeah.
We can make a 12-year-old whiskey in 4 hours, you know? But it's the same type of things that you see over and over again, right? Like you see...
Yeah, you saw it back
then. You see it after Prohibition's over, you know?
Absolutely.
And, you know, I found the story, I think, in the New Yorker where somebody is using music to, you know, help age their whiskey, which is a very modern idea. You know, several companies do that now. Blacken the Metallica whiskey.
Where they crank it up real loud.
Exactly. And, you know, Dave Pickerell supposedly got the idea from West Point when he was there, where he saw the organist couldn't play certain keys because it would, like, blow out the windows.
Yeah.
And then he realized that could be used somehow for...
Well, I mean, it's like shipping whiskey where it sloshes around in the barrel. You know, you're kind of letting it micro slosh around, but
it doesn't. You know, I don't. Yeah, I'm not. The jury is still out. I think.
I mean, incremental gains at best. I think is what you're seeing from that, and you know, you're not.
I think the sloshing may be more effective.
Yeah,
that I think has been proven more effective. The jury is still out about the music. I don't know if Wiley would sign off on that.
No.
You know, if it were...
Well, you'd have to specify on the label what music you used.
They do, though. They actually do.
They do. Yeah,
they show. But
you know, now we need an inspector to check.
Right, exactly.
Wait, you were playing the Carpenters when nobody was listening. You were tired of Metallica.
The whiskey doesn't like it. You know?
Yeah,
it doesn't like that music. Well, Copper and Kings, I think, in Louisville,
I've been to their distillery.
And they're a little bit more flexible in terms of the music, depending. I think when I was there, it was Lil Wayne's birthday or something.
Mm-hmm.
So they were blasting Lil Wayne.
Oh, that's funny.
It was pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's just funny. It seems as far as we've come, it's a lot of these ideas are being, you know, recirculated, you know, back again. Where,
well,
you know,
they all come down, you know, in a little bit to the same thing is like, what's a shortcut, you know? And distilling whiskey and making straight spirits is always in a little bit of an expensive business.
For sure.
And you can, every time you do it, you can see where you're leaving money on the table.
Right. Capitally intensive.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of waste, you know, as part of the
like
process.
You're not using all the distillate.
Exactly.
You're doing this and that.
The heads and the tails you're throwing away.
Yeah. You know, there's all this stuff like that.
The barrel soaks it up.
Yeah. And then you only use the barrel
greedy,
once.
Greedy barrel steals, you know, part of the whiskey.
Yeah. And then people say, well, okay, what if we could stop evaporation? And that's, you know, that's one third of what aging does to improve a spirit is the evaporation concentrates it and makes it rich on your tongue. And it gives you this lovely texture. So people are wrapping their barrels like I've seen this in Mexico. They wrap their barrels in plastic so that it doesn't evaporate. But then it's not aging.
Right.
You know, without evaporation, it's not aging.
It's like
that's part of the aging process.
Well, that's like, we've seen that in France, you know, where cognac at a certain point is transferred to a glass.
Yeah, and then it doesn't,
age.
Or
I think, you know, when Sazerac was trying to parcel out their 18-year-old rye, you know,
they had it
slowly
in tanks.
Releasing it out.
Yeah.
They were releasing, you know, they were keeping it in airtight stainless steel tanks, and obviously it doesn't age. I mean, it's the same.
I mean, it might change a little bit, but only incrementally.
But it's essentially
not noticeable.
The main difference between wine and spirits, right?
Yeah.
Wine comes with a cork.
Yeah.
You want there to be some kind of transfer of air that allows the wine to keep maturing in the bottle, whereas spirits, you know, you have a 12-year-old whiskey that's been sitting in your liquor cabinet unopened for 50 years. It's not a 62-year-old bottle. It's still a 12-year-old.
I did a few years ago with Alexander Gabriel of Maison Ferrand Cognac. We sat down and tasted bottles that he'd bought at auction of 3-star, which is basically drinking grade, you know, just basic grade cognac.
I would only drink 4-star myself.
Yeah, well, this was, you know, right. I thought we were slumming. but we tasted ones from 1815 up until about 1950.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were all young cognacs.
Yeah.
You know, none of them.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Was like, oh my God, the 1815 right. one is amazingly old. And right. no, it no. was a young cognac, yeah. you know, yeah. it was fine, but and it was
it
a young
not
cognac.
Not aged, you know.
No, not really. No,
not had become.
It was good. I mean, it had been probably aged a little more than you get
right.
Some,
but not in
later
the bottle
periods.
Though. Like,
no, yeah, yeah, before they bottled it. Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, yeah.
I know when somebody says something about this is how it's always been done, or
yeah.
this tastes just like it did, you know, 150 years ago, and you know, you and I will exchange a look because
yeah.
it's probably
150 years ago they were coloring it with thick caramel, you
right,
know,
exactly.
that so it was a little bit sweet. They were blending it with this
well,
and that.
It's a very optimistic yeah. way of looking back on history to assume that what you know the people were, you know, they were you know almost naive or that their values were so
yeah.
much more you know genuine. You know, they were trying to screw you with fake.
I mean, or even, you know, they were just trying to make a buck. I mean, there are
right.
like so many liqueurs, you go into their history. And if you read their marketing materials, you see, you know, this was based on a
right.
on a formula by this order of monks.
Right.
I mean, Chartreuse actually sort of was.
Right.
But some of the others, it turns out in the like 1860s, some French capitalist said,
right.
those guys are making a lot of money. What if I come up with
marketing
my own order of
monks? Invented a long time
yep,
ago.
Yep, exactly.
Like a long time
and,
ago.
And, you know, it's like, or, you know, ours is an ancient Swiss mountain formula actually developed in a laboratory outside of Paris.
Right, and just as sort of we enter the golden
yeah.
age of American whiskey,
yeah.
we see the railroad, which helps, right,
yeah.
create national brands. But
yep.
we also see the creation of ad agencies.
Yeah.
Like, for the first time, you have people, marketers, who are being like, what will appeal to Americans like across the country?
I mean,
what
they're marketing
story?
Like Overholt rye, a good, you know, standard brand of rye, but as like the perfect medicinal whiskey.
Right, exactly.
You know, with pictures of doctors and nurses.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, this stuff must be healthy for you
yeah.
because they use it in hospitals.
Well, it is.
Well, they didn't, you know, they didn't have like all the drugs we have today
right.
either. So
around the turn of the century with all the legislations that's passed.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of these things that were purely medicinal suddenly become recreational,
yeah.
right? Or they,
yeah, yeah.
like even Coca-Cola has
yeah.
to take out the cocaine, right? After, you know, all these people.
That's when I lost all respect for them.
That's when you became a Pepsi man.
Yeah.
They left it in. And then they kind of have to resell themselves, right?
Yeah.
Like they have to reevaluate
yeah.
their
They got
to
reinvent what they
right.
did, you know.
There's suddenly their value proposition. It was
yeah.
all about like curing your, you know, spleen problem. And now it's about, you know, the flavor.
Well, I mean, it's kind of funny. You think of something like Hostetter's Bitters, a huge American brand
oh, yeah.
in the 19th century. And it was basically a bottled whiskey cocktail with some bitters in it so people could drink cocktails and say they were taking medicine, right? And it's being sold medicinally. Then comes the Pure Food and Drug Act, and it's like, this is just a whiskey cocktail.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can't sell this as medicine.
And
it's what the hell do you do with that brand then?
And I think it's part of it's tied to the temperance movement too. Like,
yeah, very strongly. Yeah,
like that they were big. You know, the temperance, the dries were very much proponents of all the scientific research
mm-hmm.
and trying to like, you know, point out like this medicine is just another form of alcohol.
Yeah.
Like, this is just another
yep.
way. Whether
yep.
or not the people thought that it was helping them or whether or not the people prescribing it realized, you know, it was...
Yeah, but it was, in fact, a way to get a
right,
drink
exactly.
and not
it
admit
was,
you were having a drink.
Exactly. And they were, you know, that all of the the temperance movement, that was a big thing, you know, trying to get the medicine, in quotes, cleaned up and the pharmacies really selling medicine and not just cocktails.
Yeah, they were very hard on the patent bitters, right, with reason, because they were mostly bottled cocktails, you know, and aimed at getting around them.
When you look back at the history, it's way more fascinating and also way more complex than, you know, we're often led to believe in this sort of very, you know, I don't know, pastoral image of the way that, you know, alcohol was sold in the 1860s. And it was this,
it was a free for all. If you really knew your stuff, you could probably get a good drink.
Yeah.
I will say that. But it wasn't easy.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously not all the brands or all the bartenders were using creosote lead to make their, you know.
There was stuff, Geneva was imported in the bottle.
Right.
I think it was the late 1870s, maybe early 1880s. England changed their laws so that you could easily. So before that, distilleries weren't supposed to bottle and sell their own products.
Huh.
It had to come through a rectifier, a second person. But England changed their laws. And you could see as part of there's this movement for like, let us, you know, cut out these people who are stepping all over our products like so many cocaine dealers. Right. You know, it's like
cutting it.
Yeah, cutting it and cutting it. I mean, yeah. I've got this English book here, the Loftus London New Mixing Guide. And this is how the guy tells you to sell foreign brandy. Making up foreign brandy for the counter trade. Start with some cognac, 20 gallons. Add 5 gallons of British brandy, which was not brandy at all. It was artificially flavored grain spirits. Then add water, and you'll be fine. You know, add 4.5 gallons of water, and you get 29.5 gallons of cognac to be sold. And that was the good one.
Yeah. I know a lot of these recipes call for things like, you know, prune juice or prunes.
Yeah.
Different fruit skins or pits of fruits being ground up.
Oh, I mean, the gin ones here are terrifying. It's like oil of almonds, oil of cassia, oil of nutmeg, oil of lemons, oil of juniper, oil of caraway, oil of coriander. Those are not like the actual things.
Right, just,
these are artificially made up extracts.
Sure, either. Extracts in parentheses.
So you start with gin and then you add a bunch of that stuff and then you add water and like... And it'll all come out, like, great.
Tastes delicious.
It's delicious.
Mm. Again, like, that seems like a very modern idea. I'm sure there's some craft gin maker out there who's using, like, essential oils instead of actual botanicals.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, they're claiming it's somehow better because it's, you know, they don't have to steep it or something.
Yeah, it's a scam. There also is something to be said for the other side, though, is some of these traditional ways were actually pretty good. It's like like in cognac, when they reduce things in proof, they don't add water. They add barrel-aged water that has a little spirit in it that's been aged so that it doesn't shock the spirit.
Right.
And that's like a traditional blending technique. And you're like, what the hell are you putting in my cognac? Right. That's water with alcohol in it? You know, that's not right.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
It's and like then, a highball, basically.
Yeah, basically. And then, you know, if they add any... sweetening to as they used to be able to do, that would also be in the form of barrel aged sugar syrup mixed with alcohol, you know, so everything, everything was aged.
Yeah.
And these are all traditional ways of making things that sometimes yield a pretty good product.
Or like the,
and we talked about this when we talked about rum.
Right. I was just about to say the Dunder and, you know, that all these traditional rum things, you know, that people just sort of did because it was traditional, but obviously, you know, is such a big impact on the way that the
I mean, British Navy rum was never a straight rum. It was a blend of whatever the British Navy could get at a good price that went into open-topped vats, sat there for 2 years, and then was mixed with a little bit of caramel coloring and maybe sweetening. I mean... there's some argument about that, how the caramel was, but it was definitely a blended rum, of rum.
Welcome to our world that there's a controversy about the sweetening of the caramel.
Yeah. And it wasn't just blended from Caribbean rum either, because they got rum from Asia too.
Right.
From India,
all over.
From all kinds of British colonies and from South Africa where they made rum when it was a British colony. So, I mean, and, you know, now Navy rum is like this standard of like purity. And it was never like that. It was never pure.
Right. I mean, it's funny how these terms and, you know, these sort of histories have become, you know, these noble traditions, you know, where in fact, a lot of it, who the hell knows what they were doing.
Yeah.
And B.
And you can track it down. You might not want to repeat it.
Right. Exactly. You know, I'm all for people doing historical, you know, recreations or inspiration, but
about. I'd much rather have my rye made from rye than from burnt peaches and oil.
Oh, for sure. I'm not suggesting that people go out there and try these recipes because you will.
It's very bad.
To yourself.
Yeah.
But it is amazing. Almost, there's so many of these bartenders' guides and cocktail books that have these recipes.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so which means it was widely practiced.
It was widely practiced.
And I think people obviously knew the difference, perhaps, or the, you know,
well,
some bars that there must have been like.
There were price differences.
They must have known that it probably was like, you know, whiskey in quotes versus the real stuff.
I mean, the unscrupulous bars would sell that stuff for a high price.
Right.
The scrupulous ones would still sell the put together stuff, but they'd sell that for cheap.
I'll see stories from around the world today about how many people, you know, this raid in, you know, this country, you know, netted 3,000 bottles of counterfeit vodka, or this raid, you know, or some of the cognac.
It's really
brands.
Big in the UK, for instance.
Yeah, and some of the cognac brands are terrified of people, you know, refilling bottles and. I think it's Martell who pays for, you know, the ribbon to be returned because that's very hard to counterfeit.
Yeah.
So that, like, you know, I've taken very serious, like, anti-counterfeiting measures because they don't want somebody just to fill up their bottles.
A lot of the world has non-refillable bottles.
Yeah.
You know, where you were.
It's like a little, like, widget that's put into the neck where you can't
pour it full again.
Right, which it sort of boggles the mind to even think that would happen today, but it happens a lot.
It happens a lot in a lot of parts of the world. There was a case last year or the year before where a chain of bars in New Jersey was hit heavily for refilling all their bottles with the cheapest stuff. So if you were ordering that Grey Goose martini,
it was not.
You were getting pop-off.
Right. You know? Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe if you're lucky.
Well, and I think that even in the UK, they developed some kind of like tester.
Yeah.
Like that, you know, they'd raid the bar. Just like the, you know, the Department of Health will do in New York. But they'll literally test the bottles to make sure that somehow they know.
Yeah.
That, you know, what each
I don't
one
want to think
is.
About how they know that either.
Right.
I mean, what are they putting in there?
Gas chromatograph, whatever. Yeah, yeah. But like, you know, there somebody's developed a tool to basically say this is Bombay. Like, this is actually you know, whatever this is, you know, no, this is. And for a long time in America, in a lot of cities, we saw, you know, it was illegal, I know in San Francisco, to refill a bottle.
Yeah.
So you had all of these craft cocktail bartenders who were like inadvertently breaking the law because they weren't refilling like a rum bottle with a different rum. They were refilling it with like some kind of homemade tincture or like some kind of
or
syrup.
Infusion. Or,
right.
It's like we've infused our rum with blank. Okay, that's illegal because you refilled that bottle.
With something different.
Yeah,
like,
you
can't
do that.
It's
not what it says on the label.
And suddenly they're getting, you know, citations, especially when California, I think, was pretty cash-strapped a few years ago.
Yeah.
They were really handing out the summonses.
Yeah.
And the bartenders had to change the law because in order to basically make the drinks the way they wanted to.
I mean, the public have actually demanded stuff that they couldn't legally do.
We now see sort of on the high end, too, where, you know, suddenly in certain towns I go, and every bar has a full line of Pappy Van Winkle, you know, and it's
you're looking at that.
Like, how does every bar in this, you know, in this city have... I'm not thinking about Louisville, which, fair enough. You know, you're in Texas. Like, why is the allocation suddenly,
you see there's a huge black market in empty Pappy Van Winkle bottles.
Exactly.
Why are people collecting these bottles?
And why are they so expensive?
I'm a whiskey bottle collector, empty only.
But even back in the day, things like all the spices, which is, again, something that you see today, where the nutmeg was, you know, sawdust with, you know, blah, 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 which is why, I mean... You always preach use full nutmeg, grate it yourself.
Grate it yourself.
And that way you know it's more expensive, but at least you know. And even today, there's a lot of spice fraud where what you're buying is not the ground spices, and sometimes not.
Yeah, honey is often like sugar syrup.
And, right. Now I need a drink.
Yeah.
Out of the bottle.
Yeah, out of the bottle.
I don't want anybody to touch it except for me.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy it at the liquor store. I'm going to open up the cap myself.
And I'm going to find a reputable liquor store.
I'm going to want a glass that I'm going to wash beforehand. Don't touch my bottle, Dave. I don't know what you're going to put into it.
Oh, I know what I'm going to put into it. I've got a formula right here.
Exactly. Creosote.
Well, you like Dasher, scotch. Right, totally.
Creosote
for scotch, for sure.
Hopefully we've saved you from drinking some totally noxious spirited cocktails. Return with fun cocktails the next episode of Like Behind Bars. Cheers.
Cheers.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.